in conversation with musicians from the UK jazz scene. And now your hosts, Rob Cope and Dan Farrant.
Hello, Dan.
Hello, mate. How are you doing?
I'm very good. How are you?
Doing all right, thank you.
Gone out to the old cafe to get some work done.
Oh, of course.
Oh, marvellous. What coffee are you drinking? Black Americano?
Oh, no, flat white this morning.
Oh, lovely.
What about you?
Yeah, straight to the source of all power. Yeah, I'm just at home with a little pot of coffee on. So, yeah, my voice is a little grizzly this morning. I don't know if you saw, obviously it's Friday today because we're in the future. Manchester United got a big time win.
Oh, right.
Comeback, last minute penalty. There was some, I don't often become like a hooligan and shout at the TV. But honestly, last night, Dan, I was more nervous than I've ever been on stage about this football match.
Really?
Yes.
Football's a bit wasted on me, I'm afraid.
Interesting. What's
I think the extent of my football knowledge is the IT crowd.
Oh, I've not seen that. Is this it's going to be another thing for the list?
Yeah.
I mean, that episode of Arthur you put me onto with Joshua Redman was an absolute masterpiece.
It's really funny.
Isn't it? Now I'm going around telling everyone to watch it like I'm, you know, the great. I mean, so good. What sport would it be for you?
You know what? I don't really know.
No, I've never known you as a big sporting guy.
I mean, I like playing chess.
Hey, we played golf together. That was always...
golf. Yeah, I enjoy golf.
Yeah. Do you ever watch golf?
Oh, it's the most boring sport in the world to watch, isn't it?
Interesting. I watch Augusta, the Masters. That's really relaxing because it's like the most world's most beautiful like sculpted garden.
Oh yeah, I'm not really into gardens either. So
fair enough. Have you seen? There's one hole somewhere in there. I've forgotten where. I think it's in Florida. Like where you tee off, and then it's there's a little like circle of grass surrounded by a lake. That's fun because obviously watching a ball plop into water is timeless.
That's an all too familiar sight. For us, isn't it? Let's be honest, when we play.
Yeah. Do you remember the last time we did play, we had to let people go past us because we were too slow?
Yeah, it's quite often the case.
Yeah, we were like constantly in the bushes. So
we should play again.
Yeah, we should actually. Yeah. I'd love to. That'd be really fun. Take our old pal Jake along.
Yep.
So, Dan.
So.
Your lovely wife passed her driving test yesterday.
She did. She did indeed.
Are you going to trust her with the Green Jazz Podcast Micra?
She's already been out in it a few times.
Fantastic. Yeah. How's she finding it?
Yeah, she's, she's been driving a little while now, so she's great.
I mean, for me, having owned a Micra for such a long time, I can't think of a better car to pass your test and get into.
Exactly. I mean, it's a good little run around.
Yeah, they're beautiful. There's a Two Pianos Festival on at Pizza Express. Between the 17th of March and the 24th of March, Tom Corley and Elliot Galvin, they're playing on the 24th of March. And then Ivo Neiman, Elsiona Mick, that will be equally terrifying. And the very last ones, Julian Joseph and Jason Rabello.
Oh, very good.
So today we're going to preview an EP that's out today from the Kansas Smitty's house band called Mardi Gras Volume 1. We're going to talk to Giacomo Smith, who's the ringleader of this particular social experiment, and start with a tune called King Louis.
Great, let's hear it.
Thank you.
Giacomo Smith, welcome to the Jazz Podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yes. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm a little jet lagged still.
You just got back from Baltimore. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah. I just got back. I got back on Monday, so I've had a lot of time, but for some reason I always find the mornings it hits me the hardest in the mornings when I come back. But anyway, it's a good excuse to wake up bright and bushy-tailed to speak to you.
Yeah. I do love doing these.
Otherwise, I'd just be, you know, drinking coffee hunched over at the table. You know, that's not as good.
Was it Baltimore Jazz Festival you were playing at?
No, it was a gypsy jazz. It was like a kind of a Django Reinhardt swing festival that a friend of mine put on at a place called the Creative Alliance, which I had never been to Baltimore before. I don't know if you have, but it was just a really great little theater that was a converted movie theater, and they packed it out and had, like, you know, they had a bunch of master classes and lectures, and it was really great. Really enjoyed it.
Sounds awesome. How long were you there for?
I was literally there for one day, and then I went to my hometown in upstate New York and spent kind of 5 days there, and then went down to New York and saw Kurt Elling play at Jazz at Lincoln Center Guy Barker, which was awesome.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. He was a guy had written a whole score to a radio play that Kurt had, you know, written a script and lyrics for. And they did it there, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Does Guy Barker, do you know if he lives in London or?
Yeah, he does.
He does. Definitely.
Yeah.
He did last time I checked, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah. No, he does.
So how did you end up in London if you were from upstate New York, just out of interest?
Say that again.
How did you end up in London?
When I finished school in Montreal, I was born in Italy. So I have the, you know, until they figure out how they're getting out of the EU, I don't have much trouble, you know, coming over here to to work. So I finished, you know, school, and I thought, okay, well, what do I do now? Because I didn't know that you could be a professional jazz musician. That's something that particularly London based musicians forget, that it's actually a really rarefied thing to be able to kind of make a living playing jazz music, which is just speaks so highly of the scene that we have here. You know, it's really an amazing thing that we can do. And with, you know, with the healthcare benefits and stuff, you know, that's something that you don't get in a lot of, particularly in America.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course there are people that are very established in New York, but if you're just starting out and you think, okay, I'm just going to throw myself into this, and you think, okay, well, maybe I should have a job first. And, you know, I didn't have money in the bank. So it was like, if I'm going to come over here and figure out what's going on, I'm going to get a job. So I got this job working in a university office for my old school, which is Boston University. And I stayed there for 2 years. And my whole plan was to I got this maternity leave contract, and it was going to last for a year. And then it got renewed. But I was going to stay for a year, practice my ass off, you know, and then go to New York, because of course jazz only exists in New York. Well, no, that's actually complete complete fiction that lives in the brains of the few that live in New York, and the few that grew up like me in the shadow of New York. That's not to say that New York's not obviously an amazing scene for jazz, but kind of arriving in London and kind of witnessing all of the sessions and the amazing music that's coming out of here, and the amazing musicians that live here, and, you know, the support that various media outlets give to jazz, I thought, well, this is great. So I ended up kind of staying after I put together the first versions of the Kansas Smitty's House Band, and also met Jack, who's my business partner down at the bar. And we kind of started talking about this right about the time that I was going to leave that job. And it was all so exciting that I thought, you know, I'm going to see where this goes. So that's how I stayed.
Okay. Amazing. Tell us about the venue then, about Smitty's. How did you fall into it?
When I left my job, I lived in I knew a guy who was running a thing called the Dead Dolls Club. And that's actually how I met Jack.
Right.
Which was a kind of like a pop-up in an arch over here, in London Fields. And this guy, was renting rooms above his like new pop-up bar, which was this like total dive on Kingsland Road. So we used to go in through the bar and up the stairs and like the trash cupboard up the stairs to our flat. And, you know, it was one of those things where you couldn't put anything on the floor because it would like roll, you know, it was like off and it was, above a fish fry. So you couldn't leave the window open in the summer or else you might die of like, you know, grease poisoning.
Yeah.
But the guy that lived next to me over there, was a guy called Sean Fennelly, who's now the head bartender at the very, very swanky Fitz's bar in Holborn. I don't know. Your business is jazz, but if you know cocktails, it's a decent place to go have a drink. And so he was a bartender for this bar on Broadway Market, which was in the current site that we have now. And so I became good because if you've been to Kansas Smitty's, you know that it's slightly difficult. It's off the beaten path for the reason that it's downstairs underneath another bar. And you have to know where it is you can see it on the street, but you have to know to go downstairs. And
yeah.
So anyway, I found out from him about that and then got to know just going to his bar, got to know the owners of that space. And so when it came, when it was available, I went to them and I said, well, what's going on with your space? And Jack came and we kind of made a deal with them to get into that space. And we've been there for 4 years. So it's all just, if you live in an apartment for long enough, you're going to meet somebody that's going to open a door for you. Life lesson. So, yeah, there you go.
So then out of that, the Kansas Smitty's House Band was born.
Yeah, well, the band came first.
Right. What was it used to be? What did it used to be called?
It was called the Kansas Smitty's House Band. It always has been. And I know that sounds a little funny, but actually to us it made perfect sense. Maybe we're just crazy, but it always made perfect sense because the whole idea of this was to create a setting and a home for a group of musicians. You know, it was about bringing all of the things that, you know, the kind of like perfect growing conditions for this kind of music together. So the first few times we did that when we didn't have the venue were pop-ups. You know, we did pop-up events and our pop-up events were Kansas Smitty's and they had the same features that the permanent venue has. So it only made sense that when Kansas Smitty's would exist, if it was only for a night or for two nights, that the band that played was the Kansas Smitty's House Band.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, you know, the first Kansas Smitty's event was, I think, in 2013 in the Peckham Liberal Club. And we actually did the first event in there. I know they use it a lot now for stuff, but we went in there for the first, you know, thing. And they were basically on the brink of going under. And it was like all these people who had been in it, you know, for 30 years and basically used it as a bingo hall. And we did we did like a Kansas Smitty's party. So we had juleps and we had, you know, music and we had, You know, we had DJ, and it was all the kind of stuff that we do now. You know, the concept really hasn't changed. And I think that's, I'm glad about that, because it was simple at the beginning and it's simple now. It's just, it's great music, you know, great drinks, great vibe. That's really the only stipulation.
So how often does the band play there?
About once a month.
And it's mixed with other acts that play as well. Like other bands.
Yeah, I mean, we have music 6 nights a week. So we had an amazing band last night led by Jazz Kaiser. I don't know if you've met her yet. She's a great drummer.
No.
Who just moved back from Boston with Quinn Olton and Will Satch. Mm-hmm. And so that was great. And then on Tuesday night, we did the launch for the EP that's coming out on Friday.
Yes, which the show will air on Friday. So... we're going to get onto the EP in a minute because it's coming out today.
Mm.
If you imagine awesome. That we're in the future.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's out today.
Sick.
And so the house band played on Tuesday night, but before that you had Jamie Murray's beat replacement with Zhenya Strigalev. So it was, you know, it's like a lot of people coming down to play, and it's really exciting. We have the gig that, you know, you always have your favorites, but there's a lot of cool stuff going on, but the one that I'm really excited for is in June, I think, or July. Steve Brown, the great drummer in town, he's bringing down this pianist called Rossano Sportiello. I don't know if you've ever heard of that guy.
No, I haven't.
Unbelievable. So yeah, if you need a ticket.
Oh, you know, cool. When is this? In June, July.
I can find out. You want me to check?
Don't worry.
Let me see.
All right, let's do it.
You can ask me a question if you want. Let me see here.
Yes, okay. So, June
5th.
June the 5th.
Here you go.
Beautiful. What inspired you to go for the like New Orleans vibe with this EP? Because it's called Mardi Gras, Volume 1.
Yeah. Great question. Because obviously we don't live in New Orleans, and I'm not from New Orleans. There are a few reasons, there are a few key reasons that we kind of jumped into that mood. And the first one is that the development of New Orleans jazz and the heritage of the stuff that's come out of there has had a massive influence on just about everybody in the band. You know, I mean, Pete Horsfall and Dave Archer, Joe Webb, these guys have really spent a lot of time, and Ferg Ireland as well, you know, been really interested in traditional jazz styles. You know, it's like, I think Louis Armstrong is the best thing that ever happened, frankly. So that there's that huge amount of respect and admiration for what's come out of there. And there are a lot of other names. And obviously I should have said Adrian Cox, who's, you know, clarinet player in the band. Mm-hmm. He's actually an expert on a lot of the New Orleans jazz.
Oh, cool. Where did you find him?
Oh, where did I find him? It's not hard to find him if you follow him on social media. You'll know every movement he makes.
Nice.
But I was so lucky to meet him. I actually met him in a pub in Spitalfields about, you know, 5 years ago. We ended up riding the Central Line together, which was hilarious. And talked to him for a little while, and then years later, you know, because it's rare that you know I play clarinet, and obviously he's an amazing clarinet player, and we don't usually meet people who play the same instrument as you, especially if you play something that's kind of as niche as that, you know? It's usually only one on the gig. If that. And we met, I think, years later at a jam session at like Pizza Express or something, and he's just such a powerful player. He just commands so much attention, but he's also such an amazing stage presence because he doesn't take away from what's going on. He always gives, and those people are really rare. So, you have to imagine that you have this person who's just an amazing flair player at the same time, just an incredible team player,
Yeah.
You're getting all of the inspirations that you can ask for. And then obviously there's this knowledge of this style. So we have this, so there's that admiration for the New Orleans style, but there's also the experience that we've had hosting Mardi Gras parties. So for, for a long time, we ran, I think 3 years running, we ran these big scale Mardi Gras parties at the Vault Festival underneath Waterloo Station, which is like a theater festival.
Yeah.
I think it's still going on. We don't do it anymore, but we did 3 years of it. We'd have 1,000 people come through in a weekend, and we'd be playing stuff from the brass bands and like the Meters and some of our original stuff, some Dixieland, some Trad, some all the music that we could relate to that. So, the fact that we weren't doing one this year, I thought, well, we love that music and we should put it on, we should put it out so that people can, especially all the people that came to that, they can enjoy it as well. So that was really the generating idea for these EPs. Yeah,
I love the foresight to name it Volume 1 as well.
Yeah, well, wait until you get Volume 2.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
So Volume 2 is in the works.
Is it now? Brilliant.
Almost. I just mastered it yesterday just with Lewis Durham. Great.
Oh, cool. So when will Volume 2, do you have any idea, like what kind of space do you give the first one before you put the second one out?
Well, it's there. I don't know. I mean, some marketing person would probably say we did it all wrong, but, I want people to be able to listen to them together. And I think it's, that the New Orleans music is such a, it's such a rich culture, the music that's come out of there. Obviously you have so many different, and you have such a list of incredible artists and such a list of incredible genres within that. But actually all those genres, I think, if I look at them, the ones that we kind of touch on, which would be like everything from trad up until like, soul, New Orleans funk kind of stuff, they really relate to one another. It's not like, maybe, London genres might not fit on a playlist together because this from like such disparate cultural backgrounds, so they, you wouldn't put like Purcell on like a punk album, But something about the music of New Orleans has this common thread in it. And I think that, so in 6 weeks, the new one's going to come out, and then people can listen to it as a playlist, because I would like people to listen to it as a playlist because it gives you that evolutionary thing from the beginning of the 20th century all the way up until, now, or, yeah, 70s or whatever,
There's a track on Broadway on the 2018 album. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Benihonos.
Oh, Beijinhos. Yeah. Yeah. I guess you don't have any Portuguese friends.
You could say that.
I could get you some if you want.
Yeah, I obviously need sorting out, because that was not what you said. That track is great. That sounds like you and Adrian playing clarinet together.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Man, it's so cool. That one, I've listened to that like 20 times now. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Thank you so much. Oh man, it's really nice. So,
but this album kind of felt, I mean, forgive me if this is incredibly incorrect, but the new EP feels like it's kind of like a sequel, like to that track specifically on that album feels like I don't know, maybe it's not, but it felt more closely related to this stuff.
Okay, good. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of joy in that music, you know?
Yes.
And in that Beijinhos, and I think there's a lot of joy on volume one for sure.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's something, that's definitely a feeling that the band likes to bring. So I'm glad you're hearing that.
This
I didn't Beijinhos. Necessarily...
No, I wonder that.
But it's, yeah, but I'm glad. Yeah.
What, so is that like a Portuguese folk song?
No, that's all original stuff. Adrian wrote that beginning theme, and he came in, you know, one day because we, you know, have a lot of writing sessions at the bar. And he said, I have this new tune. And he sang it to me. And he was like, it's kind of like a medium swing. And he was like, ba-da-do, beep, bop. And I was like, oh, why don't we make that into like a, why don't we make that into Beijinhos? And that's what it is. So
wow,
we kind
amazing.
Of made it into a, it's kind of like a Brazilian, it's kind of our version of like a Brazilian choro, but it's not really choro, but you know, it's more of a rag with a Latin feel.
Right.
But we pretend that it's Brazilian.
That's awesome. I played it to a student yesterday who I'm going to reveal to the public. His name is Freddie, because I think he's going to check this out. He's really into the clarinet, as I am.
Oh, cool. Wow,
so I see
cool.
He's 10, and I sent it to him, and his mum texted me back saying, Freddie says it sounds like Rio. And I was like, oh, that's
amazing.
Yeah, and I'd never thought of anything Brazilian related to it. My 10-year-old boy, Freddie's absolutely put me in my place there.
Yeah, Freddie.
Yeah.
Good for you, man. You nailed it.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Brilliant.
That's great.
Fantastic. All right. So talk us through who are the band members.
Sure. So it's on volume one, you have Alec Harper on tenor sax and Adrian Cox on clarinet. And then you have Pete Horsfall on trumpet, Dave Archer on guitar, Ferg Ireland on bass, Joe Webb on piano, Will Cleesby on drums, and I'm playing alto sax.
Sweet. Has it changed over the years? The lineup.
Yeah, we've had a few changes. We had Ruben James for a while in the beginning, great piano player. We had Pedro Segundo on drums. But you know, for the most part, the band lineup has just really stayed the same. Oh, well, Will, you know, Will is kind of the newest, I guess Alec is the newest addition to the band. Yeah, I mean it's people don't really leave very often because it's fun.
Yeah.
And we you know, I always try to keep it fresh. So, you know, it's not like one of those bands where you play the same songs for 5 years, and I have played in a lot of those bands. And that's nothing wrong with that, because if you're doing a show, you're doing a show, but the whole point of this is to really kind of explore various, you know, we called the Kansas Middies House Band. We started out of, you know, we were really interested in the jazz out of Kansas City in the 30s. And we don't play hardly anything from that era anymore. You know, the point is that we're not the Kansas City house band, we're Kansas Smitty's house band. So it's like whatever we want to bring to the club, you know, we try it out in front of an audience and see if it's going to stick.
And if they boo, then you can.
And if they boo, then move on.
So how are there any originals on the new EP that's out today?
Yeah, they're all original.
I know you said that, but I was like, that can't be true. I'll come back to this.
every piece of music that's come out under Kansas Smitty's house band is an original piece of music.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of always my idea for it. I always thought that's one of my most important points here, I guess, is kind of, you know, it's I think if you cover, I mean, there's, I shouldn't, you know, doing versions of songs is awesome, but you know, the stuff that I wanted to play in the beginning, right, you know, if I was going to play like a rag or something, or some you know, a blues or something that somebody recorded in 1950 or in 1935 or even in whatever later, I'm not going to be able to do it as well as they did it. You know, Louis Armstrong, I'm not going to play it as well as he did. I'm not going to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's probably better if you look at the assets that you have and you say, okay, well, I have these amazing players who are completely individual. I mean, Pete Horsfall is like, you know, in my opinion, he's the best trumpet player I've ever heard. You know, why wouldn't I write something for him, you know, instead of trying to get him to play something else? And that's kind of highlighting that individuality in people that are around you is like, is so empowering to the group. And it means that immediately you kind of set the bar for people to hear your music, you know, I think. I don't know. It's that kind of idea of trying to make new standards, however presumptuous that might sound, but it's kind of not really meant that way. But yeah.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
I'm stunned into silence, frankly, because it would be so easy to just find a couple of great tunes from the good old days, you know, and throw them in there. It sounds so good. I can't believe that I didn't even suspect that they were, I don't know. There's just something about, it feels like it's like grown out of the city. You know, these tunes, I can't believe you've written them
thanks.
Here.
That's really nice. Wow. Thank you.
Well, I mean it, because you can hear I'm so what's coming up for the band then in the near future?
Like, yeah, so we,
gigs wise, if people want to come see you guys.
Yeah, well, we have another house band gig at the bar on April 18th, and then we have a gig at the Underbelly on the South Bank on May 24th, which I'm really excited about, because we're going to get this piano player and singer that I'm really into down from Edinburgh. He's called Charlie Wood. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but he's from Memphis.
Right. No, I haven't.
And he's killer. And we're going to do, and this is again in the, you know, in the New Orleans Mardi Gras vein, we're going to do the music of Jelly Roll Morton and touch on some of his Library of Congress recordings. And I don't know if you've ever heard those, but they're just they're a gold mine of, you know, everything from heartfelt stories to like dirty jokes and amazing music. And it's
jokes like on the CDs.
Well, I mean, he was interviewed by Alan Lomax for the Library of Congress in like 1938. And he, I mean, some of the stories are really R-rated, you know, really. But sometimes it's it gives you all of these. He's such a character. And I think, you know, having just told you about, you know, how everything we've done is, you know, original music. And this is kind of the first time, you know, 24th of May, that we'll be doing the music of somebody else.
Yeah.
So you have to imagine that we actually have a lot of respect for him, that he's the only one that's, that we've seen fit to kind of explore in that way. So I'm excited about that because it's actually the first time, you know, that we've done that with the band.
Yeah, it's really cool. You've sort of gone backwards because I know when I studied, a lot of people would say to me, if you do your first album based on something else, you know, playing the music of Dexter Gordon, or, you know, you kind of throw in a theme that will help people to hang on to what you're doing. For instance, Nick Smart's first album, like the music of Nick Drake, you know, and then you go on and make your own ones. You guys have done loads of amazing original music, I now know. And now you're going to like play some tunes of someone else.
Yeah. It's exciting. Yeah.
Right.
Somewhere. I wonder if it'll be any easier. I don't think it will be.
Oh, no, I don't imagine it is easier. Somewhere, some like PR marketing dude is like feeling some very sharp pains right now as you like make a great success of just doing whatever you fancy.
Amazing. Yeah.
I had another question for you about this and I've completely forgotten what it was. Does Joe Webb normally play piano?
Yeah.
So was it Charlie?
Charlie Wood. Yeah.
Charlie Wood.
Charlie's going to be sitting in for Joe this time.
Cool.
But not, no, Joe is, Joe, we wouldn't know what to do without Joe.
Yes. I've heard him on, Rob Luft's album Riser. He plays organ on that album and he sounds so good.
He's so good. I mean, he's actually going to be putting out his debut, kind of recordings this year.
So great.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. Going to keep an eye out for that.
Great.
So I'm going to play a tune to finish, which I think I know it's off your new EP, but again, with the pronunciation, it looks like it should be said Saint Seer.
Yeah, you got it.
Oh my goodness. It's a miracle. I hope, you know, this balances out all of the balls ups that have come along the way. So before I press play then, tell us about the writing process. How did this tune come to be?
Oh yeah. Good. Well, I'm glad you picked that one. I really like that one. So that one's actually Johnny St. Cyr was a famous banjo player out of New Orleans, and he was in Jelly Roll Morton's bands in the late 20s. And there's some recordings of him playing solo banjo, and he's just killer. And it's kind of that, you know, it's a ragtime style, but with a great beat and, you know, funky as hell. You know, when I wrote a little rag melody, we kind of put together a whole arrangement of it. And it's basically a rag. And when I say rag, I mean the form.
Yeah.
I don't know if people aren't listening, you know, used to listening to that kind of music. The cool thing about a rag and ragtime forms is that they'll have multiple themes. So they might have, you know, two themes or up to, you know, Carolina Shout has like five themes.
Yes.
And it's
I love that about rags. It just keeps on coming and coming. You're like,
oh, yeah, exactly. You keep, and you know, you'll get somebody, you know, they'll throw a key change at you. You don't know where it's going to be. And it's kind of it's a different journey from listening to, you know, kind of a bebop influenced jazz song, which is kind of like 30 seconds of head and then solo, 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 solo. But with ragtime, you kind of have like space for solos, almost like in a pop song. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you'll have like a solo section and then something, and then new thematic material will come up. So I really like writing in that form. But this rag is interesting because you don't usually hear this on, I can't actually think of any old records that have this, but there's a drum solo in at the end over the form. So Will gets out his kind of ragtime chops, and I think it's one of the highlights of the track.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
So where can we buy this album?
You can buy it on Bandcamp, and you can listen, you can stream it on basically any service, and it will at some point materialize, I think, as a physical product, but don't quote me on that because I'm not sure when, but when it does, it will be paired, you know, be paired up with volume 2.
Oh, beautiful.
A couple of bonus tracks in there as well.
Great.
But that's not on the horizon yet. So in the meantime, it's on Bandcamp and it's on Spotify.
Great. Jack Amer, thank you so much for coming on the Jazz Podcast. It's been a real pleasure to sit and talk to you about this incredible cultural masterpiece you've concocted here.
That's too kind. Thanks, Rob. I really appreciate it, man.
Oh, man. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. Great. Well, have a great day.
Sick. Yeah, you too.
All right. See you, man. Bye-bye. Awesome. Thanks again.
Well, Dan, I said everything I had to say that was interesting at the start of the show. So now,
don't you mean start of the whole podcast that we've been doing?
Yes, I do.
2 years ago, that was all the interesting things gone out.
All the good stuff's in episode one.
Yes, maybe episode two as well.
Yeah, there's some good stuff that's seeped over. But I mean, since last week's bombshell that I've been counting the numbers wrong, I think I'm just going to give up counting completely.
So what do you think we're on now?
Roughly 94 95? Or 95, yeah.
I think we're 95.
The thing is, for like the first, I don't know at what point, I guess it happens with humans as well. But first it's like, oh, brilliant, episode 10, wow, episode 20, look how much we've done. But by episode 95, it's a bit sad. It's a bit like, you know, episode 4000 is like, oh, you know, it's better left unsaid. People don't need to know the age anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Just kill it, finish it.
Yeah. I think there's a number, and I don't know which one it was, where it suddenly becomes really sad that it's still going.
Yeah, maybe like episode 6 or something.
Episode 6 is the peak.
Yeah, we peaked.
Yes. Oh, yes. I peaked a long time ago, I can assure you of that.
You haven't even begun to peak.
No.
drill.
Yeah, you're right.
But when you do peak, you'll know.
I'll feel it, and it'll be very short.
Yeah.
Unspectacular.
So I went to a jazz gig last week. This week.
What was it?
Yeah, Ben Castle.
Oh, yeah.
Over in Dorking. It was great.
Where is that, at the Watermill?
Yeah, have you been there?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, it was nice. I mean, I hate their logo. I'm going to say it.
What, they've got a terrible logo. The Watermill Jazz Club?
Yeah, it's just awful. But other than that, it was really nice.
How interesting. What kind of music is it? What's the
vibe? Been playing like arrangements. Mark Edwards was the piano player. I think he'd done loads of arrangements, kind of mellowy, lots of kind of Meldow, and did some great Billy Strayhorn tune, which I can't remember, but it was great. Really enjoyed it. I'd recommend going seeing them. They're playing tonight. Oh, they're playing Thursday night tonight.
They're playing last night.
Yesterday. Last night at the 6 at 6. Hopefully you went.
What a brilliant end. Hopefully you went. That's the most useless piece of promotion. Of all the useless promotions we've ever done, that takes the biscuit.
Yeah, quite a long list of useless promotions.
Oh my god, wow. It's over, isn't it? That was, I've peaked, I felt it.